3, 2, 1. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. So join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use the promo code Sullivan20 for 20% off plus free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pubes. To complete the set, Manscaped threw in the Shed travel bag and anti-chafing boxers as free gifts to give to you to keep all your goodies stored nice and comfortably to go along with the Performance Package 4.0. Inside that Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the signature Lawnmower 4.0. The advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts and nicks on your delicate parts. It also comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light to the promised land 2023 looks to be. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Sullivan20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use that promo code Sullivan20. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion. He is, of course, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business. The man behind the 83 weeks of dominance, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Wonderful, JP. How are you, my friend?
Doing good. That's an awesome shirt you got on over there. Florida shirt. Nice.
CCW has the copyright to it, and they're going to be opening the territory back up in Florida. So that's a pretty amazing thing. And I told you, they have a very, very tight program, and they're doing excellent, and the T-shirts are out, and you can go to CCW, the link, and pick up a T-shirt. Really nice looking. They did a good job.
When you look at the landscape of things and just in Florida wrestling, I mean, that's kind of a big thing, bringing back the championship wrestling in Florida, at least in part, because that's the history right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think people that were involved in championship wrestling from Florida back in the day, and I think there's a big nostalgia thing of championship wrestling from Florida. You know, the YouTube, I mean, they get all kinds of tape on stuff. I went to a CCW, I went to a seminar they had, and I was sitting in Emilio's office, and there's a company called 106 North Albany. That was the address of the original sportatorium there in Tampa. And they had a series of continuous There was one 6 hours. It was like from the highlights of 81 to 83. So I guess this still, you know, it's like anything else. We're in a big nostalgia craze, JP, don't you think?
Big time, yeah.
And yep. I mean, think about this. As great as Austin, Steve Austin is, he was out of the business for 19 years. Didn't work, right? And he came back, a big fanfare. I mean, people last year bought WrestleMania, maybe not just for him, but he was certainly a big influence, right, in their buy rate.
Yep.
Could you do that in any other sport?
No.
I mean, so there's, you know, they always bring somebody back. And the nostalgia thing is huge. So, and now with the YouTube and everything going on, I mean, people's career has been extended to an indefinite time. So I'm glad to see that all of this. It's a great to be a wrestling fan this time, at this time.
It's funny, though, like, as far as, like, hey, we got to build new stars and we want new guys, the nostalgia, like, lives forever. Everyone loves the old guys. They're more over than anybody new that kind of comes down the pike. It's just one of those things in wrestling. Like, Steve Austin last year, I think, you know, that was awesome. You know what I mean? Like, that was unbelievable that he was able to do that and come back and wrestle.
Yeah, after 19 years and, you know, except for Vince not knowing how to take that stunner, I don't think he ever did he?
Oh, years ago, in the 90s he did, but he took it horribly then, too. He didn't know how to take it.
Yeah, that's what I said. I don't think he ever really took it well. But
right, yep.
But Austin and Kevin Owens, he really had a hell of a match with Austin. And for Austin really came through and was Steve Austin that night. But I give a lot of credit to the young kid. Kevin really, really made that work for Austin. He was really giving, and it was nice to see.
Yeah, that was quite excellent last year. Even Cody was a great surprise for WrestleMania. I mean, it was kind of a known surprise, but he was even a great surprise when he had that match with Seth Rollins. So Mania was pretty good last year, but obviously nostalgia still, I mean, that played a huge role in those shows.
Right, right. Do you see now that we're on WrestleMania, do you think The Rock will ever wrestle again?
I know. I feel like I was shocked that he wasn't wrestling this year, to be honest, against Roman. But maybe not, because he's going to be 51, I guess. So, I mean, he's kind of getting up there.
Yeah, but I don't think it's so much the age. And I here's where I agree with you. I thought if he was going to do it anywhere, he can't be very far from that building where he lives, right?
Mm.
His homes. You know, it isn't like he's flying anywhere, unless he took a helicopter from his house to the stadium. It would be the perfect place for him to do it. Logistically, where are they next year? Philly?
Yes.
So is he going to leave L.A. to come there? I mean, this was the perfect time for him. But we can never say never, right? So who knows?
Perfect storyline with Roman. I don't know if he necessarily needs to be champion or not, but literally he's saying he's the tribal chief. Afa and Sika literally put the lay on him and christened him the tribal chief. And you got The Rock over here, who's a bigger star, bigger name, you know, one of the biggest stars, everything, going, wait a second, I'm the tribal chief of the family. You know what I mean? It's just a built-in, easy storyline. Yeah. Would be perfect for those two. And then they can kind of go face-to-face and see who the family really decides, who the family really loves. Like, even Tamina Snuka, oh, I love The Rock, you know. But what about Roman? Then you could throw in everybody else in the family, the Usos. Which side would they be on? Solo, which side would he be on?
Yeah. And the other thing, Rock's grandfather was the tribal chief. You know?
Yeah. Yes.
He was the high chief.
Yes.
I mean, it's I've done some research on the lineage of being a high chief. There's four great Samoan families, you know, that were royal families. And Peter's family is one of them. So it's very interesting, their culture and everything else. And we talked about this before. Really disconnected how many Polynesians play pro football, you know, from a place that has very few people that come from there. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Some of the greatest football players, Junior Seau, the guy from Pittsburgh with the long hair, what was his name?
Troy Polamalu.
Yeah. Polamalu. They have a great, and they're great rugby players too. You know what I mean?
Yep, for sure.
Yeah.
But that would be just so cool or so interesting just to see who is the tribal chief. I mean, just to build it. That's why I thought it was going to be this year's WrestleMania. I mean, that would have been off charts. I mean, The Rock, I guess, is too busy. Couldn't do it or whatever, you know, the excuse was. Couldn't get in shape or whatever they said. Probably not true. He's probably too busy. But that would just perfect storyline. It's built in.
Right, right.
Would you, and we've discussed this a million times, though, would you keep the title on Roman right now? I don't know. I wouldn't take it off him, I don't think.
I mean, this is, we all have an opinion, but I mean, it's like I keep on telling you about my boat. If it wasn't broke, don't fix it. I mean, they've put this storyline together terrifically. And he's come on there. They've come on there, when I say he, Hunter's come on there with Dustin, Sammy, Kevin, and Jay that could wrestle Roman, and he's got an opponent there. It all would draw against them. I can't see beating Roman right now. He's got all these other guys geared up that he could work with. I mean, they could have some, and their storyline was done so well. I don't think I'd take the belt off of him. No disrespect for any of them, but Roman's done a hell of a job, and it's like Deja Vu again. With remember when they booed The Rock out of the building, Rocky sucks? And
oh, yeah.
And they did that to Roman, right? Roman die, Roman die.
I was
watching something on the WWE channel. He got booed out of the building too, and they both overcame it and became a huge star. So I don't know if I'd upset the apple cart right now.
With like booking guys like that, like Roman, and he's so hot, he's such a great star. Have you ever had that problem before with booking where it's like, I can't beat him right now? And like, you know, have that dilemma of should he win, should he lose? Maybe it's a good problem to have, but have you ever had that problem?
Yeah, because but I don't think it's a problem. It's a wonderful thing that it's like you got too much talent, you know, working for you. I mean, think about Bill Goldberg, you know what I mean? When they beat Goldberg, I don't think it was because they beat him. It was the way they beat him that took a little luster off of Bill. But, I mean, when you got a guy like Roman and the peripheral players around him, Paul Heyman, I mean, I go through, you know, because Peacock can stop and start and go through the whole thing and rewind and all that. Their facial expressions are fabulous. Paul's facial expressions are fabulous. Sammy, to me, this is a guy that was in a Jackass match last year, right?
Yes.
Look at how far he's come in his entrance with his facial expressions. And when he takes a bump, you ever notice that he doesn't take a flat back bump? He takes a bump like you would do wooden boxing when you.
Wow. Never even noticed it. No. Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing about wrestling. Everybody takes a flat back bump. Guys that are great sellers don't always take a flat back bump. I watched Sammy's stuff the other day, And it hit me right away that he just doesn't take a flat bunk bump, especially when he goes down on his side like a boxer would when he gets knocked out. All of them together that are involved in this, the people I mentioned, the baby faces and the heels, I don't know if I've ever, I'm going to say I've never seen this many guys be so cohesive and so, so good together. I think this is the strongest. Everybody that comes in contact with this angle raises their game.
It's been superb. Triple H. Triple H may be a better booker than he was a wrestler. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy on that, but I think he's doing a great job as booker. Not saying he was a bad wrestler. He just, you know, he wasn't the best. He's not Rock or Steve Austin.
If this is his idea, and I'm sure it is, I said to you before, this might be the best. The only thing that comes anywhere close is NWO, and the NWO, we sacrificed a lot of baby faces to get them out. Where this one, everybody's come out stronger, the heels and the baby faces. It's a magnificent job. Whoever's doing the kudos to them.
I know Vince started it, but this is Triple H. You know, his footprints are all over this. Obviously, Paul Heyman's a part of it. Michael P.S. Hayes is a part of it. Your buddy, Michael P.S. Hayes. And Roman Reigns, they said, has a lot of influence on the story as well.
I heard that too. I heard that Paulie was talking to some reporter and said that Roman's very creative. I could see that. He comes across very articulate. He's really come a long way since the era they were hoping that he would die, you know, and he's got something. They all do. This is just, to me, the best angle I've ever seen.
All right, so let's talk about the topic at hand. Starrcade 91 in the Tokyo Dome, a.k.a. the WCW New Japan Super Show number one. So really, this was a pay-per-view in the U.S. months later, really more towards April or so, but it actually aired in Japan. And that would be on March 21st, 1991. It was in Tokyo, Japan, of course, at the Tokyo Dome. The attendance was 64,500. So a huge sellout crowd in the Tokyo Dome for this one. Obviously, the New Japan WCW relationship here was pretty strong. Dusty's back in the fold. You're actually back in the fold as well. Were you back here in 1991 because of Dusty?
Probably. I mean, yeah, that's when there was Eric called me too. Let me see if I got my timeline right. Wasn't this the Shockmaster time?
Shockmaster. When did he debut? He was a little bit later. He was a little bit after this.
Okay.
He was more towards 93-ish.
Then it was Dusty brought me back.
Okay. Because it's funny that he's gone. He's in WWF. And then he comes back, obviously, January of 91. He leaves WWF and he heads back to WCW. But it looks like when he's coming back, he wants to bring some guys he's familiar with, some guys he's comfortable with. And it seems like that's why maybe he wanted to bring you back into the fold.
Yeah, I think at that time, most bookers that were comfortable with people they worked with would bring them or try to bring them in, you know.
So with this show, it's just interesting that there's going to be about four more matches that are a part of the show that are taken out of the show for the WCW portion. Do you guys know that going in, like when these shows happen, that, hey, you know, we're only going to pick and choose? Obviously your guys are in the matches as well, but it's like you're going to pick and choose, and you're going to have some matches but not all matches on the show.
I mean, I wasn't involved in any of this backstage stuff at the time. I think, as you told me, I came in 3 days before this, right? I'm sure they whoever was in charge on both sides hammered it out. No, I mean, it has to be. If this was a joint show, parameters had to be set. And I would like to see some discussions on that. You know what I mean? Somebody on this joint show, this is one of those things that you go in there with the best intentions, both people do, but for two huge companies to work together can be a little difficult. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And you've got to be, and obviously something happened because we didn't have another one of these for quite a while, did we?
No, you had one in 92 a year later, and then 93 a year later, and then they stopped.
Okay, so it built up to something went wrong, right? Or maybe it didn't. Maybe it was only a three-year trial basis, and both parted mutually satisfied or dissatisfied. But, yeah, it's very hard because how do you get your guys over losing? Do you know what I mean? Because you got to start doing favors for one another. You got to be very creative when you're doing that. So I'll be interested when we run down this card.
When you look at that, though, it's almost like, okay, the bookers or the guys that are part of the committee for WCW and New Japan kind of have to agree on certain things and agree on certain finishes. Could that be difficult, or is it almost like tit for tat? Okay, your guy's going over here, my guy's going over here, or how does that work?
Well, it's got to be difficult. First of all, just how the finishes performed. One is somebody slips over. Do you know what I mean? Double crash, one guy falls on top of the other.
Yep.
That's not like losing to Goldberg's jackhammer. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
So it gets to be quite tricky.
Because there's a great story that Sting actually tells about Great Muta and him. And he loves Muta. It's one of his favorite opponents. He loves him. He literally just tagged with him a month ago in Japan for one of Muta's last matches. So, I mean, obviously the respect level's there and they still get along to this day. But it's funny, Dusty told Sting, like, hey, you know, this is happening in this match. Like, you're going over. So they get to Japan, they get to the back, and Sting goes, all right, well, you know, what are we doing for the finish here, Muta? And Muta goes, we'll do the moonsault. Like, and, you know, and Sting goes, no, I'm going over. And Muta goes, no, you're not. I am. Like, the miscommunication, and Sting had no problem. He goes, all right. He goes, if that's what they want. So then he went to Dusty, and he goes, Dusty, I thought I was going over. Either I'm confused or Muta's confused. He goes, no, he's going over, Daddy. So it's like, even when you get there, it can be changed because of the relationship, or, like, depending on what New Japan wants, I guess.
You don't think that Steve... I don't think that Steve didn't hear before he went over what he... They told him that he was going over. Steve wouldn't make a mistake like that.
No, they told him, yeah. He said Dusty told him, yeah.
That he was going over.
Yes, yep.
But they knew he wasn't.
Yes. So when he got there, but Sting said he didn't care either way. He jumped to Muta a bunch. Like, he didn't care. But it's one of the things where he was just like taken off guard because Muta told him flat out in the back. He said Muta was smoking a cigarette. He was doing a great Muta impersonation. Muta was smoking a cigarette and he goes, we're only going to go this amount of time. He goes, you work too fast for me sometimes. I want to slow it down. You know, I just kind of telling Sting what's going on. So Sting's like, all right, whatever you want to do. And he goes, but what should we do for the finish? And then he said the moonsault. And Sting was like confused, thinking that he was going over and Muta was going over.
You know, and Steve's the kind of guy that's such a professional. He really didn't care. And he and Muta are friends, so it wouldn't matter. But, you know, can't we just be straight up all the time? You know what I mean?
Right. And we'll get into the main event too, because the main event has a bit of a dusty finish, but a bit of a confusion as well. Before we get into the actual WCW card, I'll just mention the four dark matches. So there's 11 matches in the card, but technically only seven for the WCW side for the Super Show when they actually air it. But so I'll do the whole card of just the dark matches at first. So yeah. The first match was Animal, Hamaguchi, Kimura, Kido, and Hoshino defeating Super Strong Machine, Hiro Saito, Goto, and Hanaga in an 8-man tag match, and it went 10 minutes and 12 seconds. So that was just basically all the New Japan guys. Then there's another match. It's actually the third match on the card, but really the second dark match. Scott Norton defeats the Equalizer, a.k.a. David Sullivan, and that match goes about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Interesting to note, Norton's not really part of WCW at this point, but the Equalizer is, and it's almost just like a squash match for Norton here, but it's almost just for the Tokyo Dome crowds, just for the Japanese. So that's their guy, Norton. He's not the WCW guy at this point.
Yeah.
So then they have Big Van Vader. It's technically the 8th match of the night, but it's the 3rd dark match. Big Van Vader and Crusher, Bam Bam Bigelow, defeat Doom, Ron Simmons, and Butch Reed in about 13 minutes. That's one of the things where Vader's not technically a part of WCW yet. Obviously, Bam Bam's not. Doom is, and Doom ends up taking the loss. Do you think that they just don't want their guys losing on the show to guys that aren't technically in the company yet, really? I mean, Vader's kind of going to be there very soon, but is that the reasoning behind some of that, not showing it?
Vader took the fall, didn't he?
No, him and Bam Bam get the win over Doom.
Yeah, but I mean, Vader.
Okay, he got the win, yes, yes.
Vader got the win. Vader was being pushed very hard, right?
Yep.
And this had to be before the Hanson Vader match, right?
No, this is after that.
Okay. Okay. So Vader was their guy at this time, just about, right? Was anybody over for New Japan more than Vader? I don't think so, right?
No, he's their guy. He did technically debut versus Hanson, but that was the month before this, and they had that double DQ at WrestleWar 91. So that was kind of like his big coming out party for WCW, but he was really a part of New Japan at this point. So, yeah. I mean, there's negotiations, and he's definitely coming in because he really starts being used in April of that year. And kind of going forward, he's basically going to be there full time. It's still doing New Japan, but I mean, he's basically a full time guy for WCW in April of 91 before having the match in February, the month before with Hanson.
Okay. I mean, so they were going to protect their investment now that they've got an investment with New Japan, correct? I mean,
Yep.
So they're showing them, hey, we're going to make sure we take care of him because we understand you may be using him when he's going to be working for us.
Yep.
They want to give up they don't want to rock the boat just for a finish. You know what I mean?
Yep. Just want to note, though, because I was figuring this, Vader actually debuted in 1990 for WCW. I remember he beat the Z-Man. He beat the Z-Man at Great American Bash. So he was kind of being used. He wasn't officially a part of like the roster as of yet because he was still New Japan's guy. But that was when WCW started using him in 90. He'd come back here and there, nothing like crazy or nothing really full time, but they'd bring him in for some big shows. He'd do some house shows and stuff. He'd do some TV. And they really didn't start really using him until April of 91. So it was almost like 9 months later when they actually start using him. He's basically New Japan's guy before that. So and I know what you mean. Like, basically, they're protecting their guy. He's got to go over against WCW guys no matter what.
Yeah, and it sends a good message, don't you think, to New Japan, too? This is, we're going to protect our mutual investment.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
You could trust us. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So then the last dark match technically was the 9th match of the show. Ricky Choshu defeats Tiger Jeet Singh, retaining his greatest 18 club championship. The match goes 11 minutes. Obviously, that's not on the WCW portion because that's a purely New Japan match. So we know for that one. So when the actual show gets started, as far as the WCW pay-per-view version, the first match is Koshinaka, Kobayashi and Iizuka defeating Tim Horner, Brian Pillman, and Tom Zink in a six-man tag. The match goes 12 minutes. Obviously, these are like three of New Japan's guys. It's funny, Iizuka, young guy at this point, thinking of him because he was still wrestling not that long ago. And, yeah, obviously, he's kind of, to me, considered an old guard. But here in 91, he's new guard, defeating all your young guys, Horner, Pillman, and Zink.
Yeah. I wasn't there. But this had to be one of those things where they're trying to work together as good as possible. And they're saying, well, our guys, the Japanese side, New Japan is probably saying, well, what do you guys think? And they're going to say, these young guys are going to get beat by WCW is going to say, the young guys are going to get beat by the older generation, correct? And yep. Then the New Japan's going to say, well, yeah, because these guys are on their way out and they're still drawing money, and we'll make sure we take care of the young guys on the next shows coming up. So, yeah, it was one of those things I could think that I'm thinking is they're both coming up with reasons why are we beating the young boys? Well, we're beating the young boys because of the long range. They're going to have a hell of a match. Come out of this match with our veterans looking really good, even though they lost. And their time's coming. Good thinking, I think.
And a pretty good match for the most part. It was a pretty good match. It's just interesting to, like, when you kind of look at the card, it's like, are they going to do, like, you know, make it even, if you will? Is you know, everybody going to have a fair shake as far as WCW getting it their happiness with a couple wins and New Japan? And by the end of the show, which we'll talk about, but I think that they were happy with the results of kind of trading a little bit of tit for tat, a little bit of give and take as far as them both getting what they want.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the first time they've done this, correct? They were all, New Japan and WCW, on the best behavior, trying to not to make not even a splash, not a wave. They don't want to mess this up, because when it did get messed up, it took a lot to right that ship again.
The next matchup is basically an IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship match. It's New Japan versus New Japan, but Liger was being used by WCW too. So, I mean, you can kind of consider him both a little bit. So Liger retains his IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship over Akira Nogami. The match goes about 16 minutes. Pretty damn good match here too, from these two, but it's basically, it doesn't have to do with the WCW booking. I mean, they could do what they want, but it's just Liger going over and Liger looking strong in a 16-minute pretty good match.
No. Again, Liger, you remember this, when we started Nitro, Liger was on my first match.
Yes. Well, yeah. So what do you think about Liger? You must like him a lot.
Well, I knew that he was getting the bulk of the play on the dirt sheets as the guy from Japan was the Golden Boy. So I knew, and I like him a lot, and I think he's excellent, you know what I mean? And he can perform with the lighter guys, and he can perform with the super heavyweights. He's a great performer. And, you know, it was also, both companies liked him, so it was a no-brainer, I think.
Definitely, for sure. The next matchup, the Four Horsemen, Arn Anderson and Barry Windham, defeat Masa Saito and Masahiro Chono in about 9 minutes and 15 seconds. Pretty good match here. Nothing crazy, nothing right home about, but pretty good. But notice, of course, the Horsemen go over. The WCW gets a win here, kind of one and one, if you will, with New Japan, as they got their win in the six-man, and WCW is getting a win here with the Horsemen in the tag match.
Yeah. You'd have to keep the Horsemen. I mean, they were the foundation for WCW. You know what I mean? You can't, on a big show, in my line of thinking, you can't beat these guys. I mean, they're various mental and drug money. If you're going to beat them, it has to be a end of a program in a at the Tokyo Dome against whoever you put them against, you know, Muta, Sting or something like that. But you can't knock these guys off. They're too influential and too big of money drawers just to bump them off.
So they have a brief intermission, and Antonio Inoki is out there. I don't know why he's not on this card or if he was injured, but he looked healthy. He's out there. He kind of beats up a few ring attendants and almost like just an intermission to get the crowd excited. I mean, anytime he comes out there, they're in like a little bit of a fever pitch. They love seeing Antonio Inoki. Not sure if you know or not, but was he injured or something? Why wasn't he on this card?
I think he was trying to. I don't know the answer, and I'm trying to figure out logically why. Maybe he wanted to sit back and watch the show and not have any pressure on himself. Maybe he wanted to watch how they were running the show backstage. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Maybe he wanted to see how they were working together. I would think, because, you know, he'd have to do that a lot when his own show, when he was taping and he was wrestling. But maybe he wanted to see how well they were going to work together backstage. And because of different things, language barrier, do we trust one another completely yet? A lot of different things. That's the only thing reason why I can say that. Or the plain one, which you just said, he's hurt. But I don't see that.
Next match up is the match of the night to me. It's unbelievable. This match is awesome. The Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott, defeated Hiroshi Hase and Kensuke Sasaki. Obviously, the Steiner brothers were part of WCW. New Japan guys are Hase and Kensuke Sasaki. The match goes about 10 minutes, and it actually the match was for the WCW Tag Team Championship and the IWGP Tag Team Championship. The Steiner brothers win in 10 minutes. It's a classic. It's a great match. WCW now up, it seems like 2-1 here, but Steiners, New Japan, they're awesome over there.
Yeah, and they had contracts with New Japan even when they were with WCW.
Yeah, oh yeah, yep.
Yeah, so it wasn't like, actually they were for both companies, so them going over didn't affect either company. Do you know what I mean?
Right, because they were used on both. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And it was a good thing to put the both belts on them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're you know, arguably the greatest tag team of all time. It just works. It makes perfect sense. Were you familiar with Sasaki and Hiroshi Hase as much?
Not as much, of course, not as much. But I had seen them perform a few times, yeah.
Because Sasaki, obviously, in 95, comes in, he beats Sting, he's the the United States champion, he made events, well, not made events, because technically Flair and Savage go on last, but the World Cup of Wrestling is Kensuke Sasaki and Sting in 95, so obviously, you're familiar with him just as far as booking him in 95.
Right.
What did you think about New Japan at this point? Like, they're selling out 64,000 people in Tokyo Dome. WCW's kind of struggling. Did you feel that WCW was trying to like latch on to a bigger promotion, or you think that New Japan loves, you know, being a part of an American promotion, like teaming up with them as well, because they get to use their talent?
I think that you hit it on the head that, first of all, New Japan has, since maybe even before this match, this show, right? They've always wanted to break into the American market, even till today, right?
Yeah, big time.
And they really haven't busted into the market since they were with WCW. And just like Vince sees the overseas markets as gold mines, they see... I would imagine if they came to the United States and North America and did well, they would expand not only from the United States and Canada. They would go work a deal, and they have, I believe. Haven't they worked a deal out with AAA before?
CMLL.
Okay. So, yeah, everybody wants to become a globalized entity today, and these guys wanted to do it back then. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And if you look at it, the Steiner brothers and Sting, while WWE wasn't as popular, I mean, everybody's familiar with them. They, you know, they probably had the action figures, the Galoobs, and everything else. I mean, they're probably very familiar with Sting and the Steiner brothers. They weren't in WWF at this point, so maybe not as popular as Hogan, et cetera, the WWF guys. But in New Japan, the Steiners and Sting, I mean, they were huge stars. Jim Ross was constantly talking about how Sting was voted one of the most popular wrestlers in Japan, and he'd only wrestled there like a handful of times. So up until this point. So it's just one of those things where despite WCW maybe here not being as popular, the Japanese fans knew who these guys were, and they loved them.
Yeah, yeah. And the guys you've mentioned, they kind of could transition back and forth from company to company because they were like a new generation, don't you think?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
So the next matchup is probably your favorite wrestler of all time, Elegante, defeating the Big Cat, Curtis Hughes, by submission in about 2 minutes and 15 seconds here. Are you a big fan of Elegante in the wrestling business? Jorge Gonzalez.
He was a very nice man, but, you know, he had signed, I believe I'm correct, didn't he sign a personal service contract with Turner?
For the Hawks, yeah, and they never used him, so he was signed to Turner, yep.
Yeah, so he had to be paid.
Yes.
So.
They had to use him, yeah, to do something, yeah.
Yeah, so Ted was trying to do something, get some kind of return on his money. But I don't think it helped. And he was sickly, too, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he had bad diabetes, right?
Yeah, he actually died from it, I believe.
Yeah. And I forget what year he died, but yeah, it was like obviously way too young. I think he was in his 40s, way too young, I think.
I don't even. If I. Something tells me it was like 41, very young to die.
Only 44, yep. Okay. Only 44 years old, yeah, way too young.
Yeah.
Jeez. When you look at it, do you like him in the business, though, because he's got such a unique look? He's 7 foot tall, or it just doesn't work because he can't really do anything in the wrestling business?
You know, he was very awkward. That's why he didn't make it in the basketball. You know what I mean? He was not a traditional athlete. I think he made it because they found this guy. And where was he from?
Argentina.
Yeah. But it was a remote place in Argentina.
Yep.
So they pulled up, you know, the old proverbial story where they're out in the country and there's a guy pulling the plow, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Who is this big monster? Yeah. Yep.
So I think that's how he got his start, and, you know, they were hoping that he could play, but he was not suited for it.
So the Big Cat, Curtis Hughes, here, I mean, obviously before the Mr. Hughes gimmick, before he gets, you know, good footing in the business, has to take the two-minute loss to make Elegante, you know, look like a monster here. It's just funny. It's like, yeah, I don't know if this guy's going to work out. I know he had a match against Flair on TV, too. It's just, I don't know.
That's when he was saying, I want the belt, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Very difficult position to be in because you got to use the guy.
Yep.
And it's the boss's money that's getting used. So very difficult. It was a difficult position for anybody to be in.
It's funny that if like think about it, it's like, okay, it's probably terrible. It actually wasn't as bad as like you would think it was because it's only 2 minutes. It's basically just a squash for Elegante, and he uses the Iron Claw basically for the win. Wasn't terrible for what it was. I don't know, because maybe the Japanese just love those freak shows. Maybe that's why it came off as not as bad.
Yeah, you know, come on, they gave us Godzilla, right?
Yeah, yep. They love those freak shows up there. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, just funny looking at Japan and just like what they're like into and who can get over with that crowd. Like Giant Silva's over there. There was this MMA fighter named Zulu Zeno who's just like this gigantic, huge guy. It's just, man, weird. The Japanese, they love like freak show fights and freak shows and wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Bob Sapp. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
Any kind of anything out of the norm. Anything out of the norm.
So the next matchup is a good one. Probably, I don't know, maybe the second best match on the show. I put the Steiner Bros maybe match first, but awesome match here. The Great Muta, who we mentioned before, defeats the Stinger in about 13 minutes. He kind of cheats as Sting goes for a big Stinger splash in the corner. Muta sprays him with the mist. Really, really cool spot. If anybody's ever seen it, like basically Sting is in midair about to jump on him, and the mist, you could see, sprays him. Great green mist sprays him right in the face as he's about to jump down, moves out of the way. Sting falls over. Muta hits him with the moonsault, and it's over. Muta gets the win. But cool finish and a really good match here with Sting and Great Muta.
I saw a picture of that, what you just described, where Sting was in the air and the mist is coming out. And the picture was in black and white. It was terrific.
Oh, that's awesome. It's like the perfect timing of Muta. Just the way he went about it was just perfect. And then he nailed him with it. Do you like the Stinger losing on such a big show like this? I know it's to Muta, but do you like Sting losing?
It's like Andre and Hogan. Someone's got to lose, and you're in Muta's home country.
Yep.
Muta is still over there. You know what I mean? He was a huge star. It didn't hurt Sting to lose in Japan to Muta, you know?
Really good match from those two. And obviously, maybe Sting thought he was going over at one point, but alas, he was not. Muta was getting the win. After the match, Sting gets his revenge on Muta and puts him in the Scorpion at Deathlock, maybe just to keep him strong. You think that's just a reason, and he's kind of getting Muta back for cheating in the match?
Yeah, give him a little something extra, you know what I mean? Give him a little something extra that they can come back with. The announcers on both sides can say, yeah, there was how he lost, there was some chicanery going on there, but after the Sting cleaned his eyes, he ended up with the Scorpion Deathlock on him, and Muta was screaming, I give, you know, it's just something to keep it open.
So with Sting and Muta there, it seems like it's 2-2, like the New Japan wins the six-man, WCW wins with the Horsemen, then WCW wins with the Steiner Brothers, then Muta wins. So it's kind of 2-2 as far as WCW winning two and New Japan winning two. Heading to the main event of the evening, Tatsumi Fujinami, who's the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, and he's going to face Ric Flair, who is the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. They're going title for title. The NWA Championship and New Japan and the New Japan's IWGP Championship are on the line here. So here's where it gets a little dicey. Here's where it gets interesting. Here's a little bit of a dusty finish for you. So the Japanese think that Fujinami wins because at one point he gets thrown over the top rope. And if you remember, at this point, WCW had the rule that if you throw your opponent over the top rope, you lose. So Bill Alfonso, your buddy Bill, he's down there. He's one of the refs. You have, obviously, Tiger Hattori, the Japanese rep, and he's there as well. So after that happens and Fujinami throws Flair over the top rope, they have a finish, and Fujinami ends up pinning Flair and winning 1-2-3. Tiger Hattori stepped in and counted Flair down for the three count. So you think Tatsumi Fujinami defeats Flair for the championship in about 23 minutes. He's double champ. They show him with both belts, and Japan's going crazy. They think Fujinami is the champion, and they recognize him as the champion, which is interesting. But the WCW version, when Jim Ross is doing it and he's doing an interview and he's explaining it, Flair's enraged in the back and they're kind of going over it. Jim Ross is trying to explain to Fujinami, you're technically not the champion because of a little bit of a dusty finish here, that the DQ happened, Flair retains the title, and that there's a rematch scheduled for Super Brawl. You know what I mean? And basically that they're going to run it back. So do you like that? He's basically a winner in Japan. They don't explain it, but he's a loser in WCW. He got DQ'd. Do you like that? It's a little bit of a dusty finish.
No, I don't like it. I don't like it. I mean, I always give this example. You know, okay, when the Patriots are playing the Falcons and they're ready to come back, right, and they're ready to score in overtime, but we have a play that, did he intercept the ball out of bounds? Oh, no, he didn't. They won the game. Oh, no, we get back to the locker room. He was out of bounds. I don't like that kind of finish. You know what I mean?
Weird, because he's technically the champion. He's technically the NWA champion. Everyone saw it. And technically, I mean, you're not in Japan. I mean, you're in Japan. You're not in WCW. So the rules shouldn't apply, right? Shouldn't the rules technically be the New Japan rules where you're allowed to throw the guy over the top rope? So I know it's an NWA title match, but that doesn't make sense. We're in Japan. We're not in WCW right now.
Yeah, I think that was one of those times when a bunch of people sit in on the finish and they're trying to figure out a way both to save face. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And sometimes when you do that, you cheat the people.
The crowd seemed like happy that he won, but little do they know he didn't really win. You know what I mean? That kind of swerved him.
And that's in my head, you do those kind of finishes and what you just said, they go out there happy. And then you just pull the rug out from the next morning when you explain that he didn't win the belt. Do you know what I'm saying? Sometimes we all overthink things and want to be too clever by half. It was not the thing to do.
So it's a good match. Yeah, so it's a good match. Flair and Fujinami have good chemistry together. But it does feel like that dusty finish where like, one thing happened and they reverse and this happened.
Well, it's also is you guys, you're working together. You told people it's a combined show and you come up with that. Now, am I going to buy the next combined show because they kind of screwed me? You know what I mean? On the main event, they screwed me on the main event.
Yep.
Maybe I'll not buy the next one.
So they go to the back with Jim Ross, and he basically, like I mentioned, he has to explain to Fujinami, he's not the champ. He threw him over the top rope. Fujinami said, 1, 2, 3, I pinned him. I got the win. I'm the champ. Is recognized in Japan still as NWA champion. In WCW TV, WCW version, he's not recognized as champ. Flair's the champ. So when they have their rematch in May, that year, May 19th, 1991, the WCW Super Brawl show is the first Super Brawl. They call it Return from the Rising Sun. It's at the Bayfront Center in St. Petersburg, Florida. Flair defeats Fujinami in about 18 minutes or so to win the title. And that, they were saying, was WCW champion versus NWA champion. But it's just funny to think, like, New Japan literally thought that Fujinami was defending his title, right? WCW says it's Flair defending the title. So even 2 months later, really, if you look at it, it's still a little bit of a cluster because the Japanese and New Japan said it's a title defense. WCW is saying it's a Flair title defense. So even months later, they kind of don't button up. It's still confusion over who the hell's the champ.
And there's, just by what you're saying, it means there's no communication going on.
Almost seems like WCW is swerving New Japan, like, oh, yeah, Fujinami's the champion. Then, like, on TV, he's not the champion. Threw him over the top rope, but got DQ'd. He's not the winner.
Yep, and like I said, you put it in a much harsher light that, yeah, they swerved them. And maybe they did, but it also seems to me, if you're going to do this cooperation shows, you're really coming out of there with a bad taste in your partner's mouth. That he can he trust you?
I know technically Fujinami does look strong because, come on, like he got DQ, but he looks strong because he really beat Flair. So I guess that's like the one saving grace is like, well, your guy still looks like he beat our champion, even though he kind of didn't.
Yeah, but, you know, that's really grasping at something, I believe, JP. When you're just starting a relationship, you know what I mean? And it's, this relationship needs to be built on trust. Maybe, again, maybe there was some miscommunications, but 2 months later, you're still not clear who's the champion. It doesn't bode well to me that you started this venture, and 2 months later, it's still confusing who's the champion. They can't get past that.
I do love the American version of this show because it's Dusty and JR. I always loved them together as a tandem doing the commentary. It was great hearing those two back together as commentary team. But as Jim Ross explains, Ric Flair is still the NWA champion despite the Japanese thinking that Fujinami is. So it's a little bit of a confusion, a little bit of a cluster to end what I thought was a pretty good show. What do you think just overall the show talking about kind of going through it? Would you give it thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle, and would the finish kind of kill it for you?
I mean, I'm going to give thumbs up because the work rate, but the finish really kind of negates how good the work rate was. I mean, here's the first time, and I don't know who's the champions to this date. You know what I mean?
It's a little confusing. Well, technically, WWE thinks it's Flair and New Japan Pro Wrestling thinks it's Fujinami. But yeah, there's some confusion for sure.
Yeah, and think about this. This is the first, and I've been stressing this. This is the first time together. And days afterwards, you still don't know who actually won. Is that the way to start this relationship?
Yeah, no, not good.
No, I don't think so either.
The show itself does have some good matches. The six-man was good. Obviously, Sting and Muda is great. The Steiner brothers against Sasaki and Hiroshi Hase is awesome. And then Fujinami Flair is good as well. So strong matches, and if you're looking for some good WWE New Japan action, I would recommend the show. I mean, there is some good stuff on there for sure. You may be confused at the end, or you may think you may have gotten a little screwed at the end, but overall, pretty good show for the most part.
Yeah, and you've got to realize there's some solid matches on that show. I mean, this might have been when New Japan was at its strongest with talent, right?
Oh, big time. Awesome.
Yeah. So it's good. It's a good show.
And they even didn't have Inoki on the show and Hashimoto. So, I mean, they even didn't have some of their big guns on the show, and they still had some of the best talent in the world easily.
Yeah.
All right, so let's hit the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. You can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Kevin, what else do you got going on in this crazy world?
This Saturday, I'll be down signing autographs in Homestead for CCW. And then you and I are going to hook up, hopefully, in Nashville at the signing at the fairgrounds.
Nice, yes, hopefully, yes. What's going on there? Is it a big show? Is there a wrestling show there as well?
Yeah, there's a wrestling show, but it's one of those mixed venues where they have, like, people from Star Wars, old TV shows.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Athletes, you know, like very similar to the big event in New York.
Right. Like Chiller Theater as well, when they bring in all those guys. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Nice.
Yeah. Nice.
Very cool. All right. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Thank you to Kevin. We'll be right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code, Taskmaster, to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy a chilling atmosphere after a hard-working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer. If you've experienced a loss of motivation, energy, or sex drive, or if you're noticing that you're a little softer around the middle than you used to be, it could be your testosterone levels have dropped. By the time men reach the age of 30, in most cases, their T levels have started to decline, and low T can lead to a loss of muscle mass, depression, lack of energy, and a low sex drive. The good news is now you have your remedy with Test X9. This stuff is the real deal, guys. This formula has 9 clinically proven ingredients to naturally boost your body's own testosterone production. Experience increases in strength, energy, and sex drive, as well as improved mood and well-being. Feedback has been awesome. Guys in their 30s and 40s have reported waking up with the quote-unquote morning wood for the first time since they were teenagers. If you want to take it to the next level, you can maximize your results with the Ultimate Test Stack, which combines the Test X9 with the T-Assist, an estrogen control and liver support blend, and Recovery PM, an amazing sleep aid that has had incredible feedback for helping people to get the best sleep they've ever had without feeling groggy that next day. You'll be amazed with the effect of raising your T levels and improving your sleep will have on your overall performance and well-being. Don't settle for average. Man up at LegacySupps.com. That is LegacySupps.com. And use the promo code Sullivan for an additional 10% off your entire order. That's LegacySupps.com. And use that promo code Sullivan for 10% off your entire order for the best health and workout supplements out there. This is Pro Wrestler approved.